Hi everyone and welcome to the Cover Mindset podcast with McGinley Coaching. I'm your host and founder, Lauren McGinley. Today we're joined by Greg Cruikshank. How are you, Greg?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Can you just tell the listeners about a background about yourself, the kind of coaching journey you've been on?
Yeah, absolutely. I started coaching about 8 years ago when I was in my mid-20s. I had to stop playing football when I was about 23 because I had some health problems off the away from football. I'd stop. I didn't do it for 2 years. Then I decided when I was 26 that I wanted to get back into it. So I did my first coaching badge with the SFA and the Adult Pathway, which was development activities. I think it could have been coaching in the game. It was one of the two. And I've just went up through the pathway that way. I recently got my AFB license in August last year. I'm also went through the back to further education. So I went to Perth College in 2017 and went to an NQ Sport and Fitness, then just kept going through like your HNC and HND sports coaching and development, then went and did a third and fourth year in a sport and fitness honours degree. That was my undergrad. Then a year and a half ago I applied to Stirling to do an online course to do my master's in sports performance coaching. So I'm in the final year of that. I'm about to start the dreaded dissertation, but that's qualification-wise and experience, I've done that. Experience-wise, I've been really lucky to have experience at St Johnston, working in their sports science academy with in the youth academy. And in 2022, I did an internship at Ross County's first team with their performance analysis. So that was a real eye-opener into like the elite level of Scottish football, like how high pressure it is and how, you know, timing is everything. Like, you can't make mistakes when you're filming games, and it was a real eye-opener. I'm the head coach of an under-18s team in Perth at Junefield Swiss. So I'm really enjoying that. And I was, until recently, I was also coaching for a junior men's team called Burgerry, but I left on Tuesday just by mutual consent. So that's up to speed with my coaching journey so far.
Oh, brilliant. And it's interesting because a lot of the guests we've had, it's always been very much coaching, and now a lot is kind of more trend of the education and learning about. Sometimes it's good to, you know, open it on kind of different horizons, like learning about sporting directors, sports science, sports performance. And it's very much a, you know, you look at the manager 10 years ago and it was very much, just picked the team, but there was never really managing up and down. It was very much just around them. But now it's a lot of kind of more younger coaches are, you know, going into kind of internships and learning about different ideas, but also just inexperienced coaches and experienced coaches. Do you think from your kind of work as in the education, you know, like the college and uni, has made you think more about the other side of the game, you know, about the, you talked about sports science, sports performance, you know, is that, because a head coach, you need to learn how to develop different strands or routes. Has that kind of made you think more about the game, you know, more of a kind of from a philosophical point of view?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember when I first started coaching and you would do like a possession box, and at the time it's like, because you've got, I don't know, I'm just throwing this out here, you've got 16 guys at training, so I'll just do a possession box because you can get them, everyone's going to touch the ball. But when I was at St Johnston and I was with the main sports scientist there, we'd go out into the pitch, and because at McDermott they have the big Astro that all the teams train on, and he went, oh, we've got to go set up the pitches. And I was like, do you mean we've got to set up the pitches? So he said, well, we need to manipulate the pitch size in order to get these benefits. So we want to, you know, develop their psychological and physical like loads. You know, you make it tighter so they're under stress, they're getting more touches. Like, that's why you put your constraints on these small-sided games. And at the time, I was baffled by this because I thought, what? Like, I've been doing that in my coaching, but I had no idea how much it developed all that. So like when the theory side came into it, like learning it that way, it baffled me. But yeah, it, it's absolutely helped my coaching accelerate a lot when you learn the theory behind it, like why you do it, like, you know, like your small sided games, like how it develops all this side of the athlete's development.
Yeah, because I was listening to a lot of kind of coaches that are like the, it's like different shapes, you know, like you've instead of a square, it's a diamond, or you can go into kind of a hexagon. And I started using it, and I started theorizing it into like a back three. So you've got like if you go into a hexagon, you could have the two at the bottom, you know what I mean? But then you've got one in the middle, you know, or a back four, or you've got it's just, do you think that there's sometimes a bit of a, we look at European kind of coaches and they kind of do a lot of kind of really good work, but there's also a lot of British coaches and Scottish coaches who try this and sometimes get a little bit, oh, I'm not sure if this is the right way or not, because it's frowned upon, because there's not a right way or wrong way, but sometimes you're thinking, this may actually be really interesting, and the players, the 16, 17, 18s, actually probably enjoy that a bit more, because it's a different kind of learning, you know. But do you think it takes a kind of a brave coach to do something that's outside the box, but might fail after 3 minutes, but continue to try and implement the style into like a, as I say, like a hexagon kind of 6v6 plus 6, you know, a possession box?
Yeah, I think you're right. It definitely takes a brave coach to say, nah, like we normally do a square or even a rectangle, but we're going to do it like a hexagon or a circle, and we're going to have these conditions. And I think if you can, as a coach, I think if you can communicate it really well and even demonstrate it, I think you'll get most players on side with it quite quickly. I have myself from long experience, like, tried to do stuff, and I think when I was quite inexperienced, you maybe just didn't explain it well. And I know there's times when I've explained it really well and it's worked perfectly. So I totally get why it can be frowned upon, because like everyone fears change. You know, we fear change, don't we? So there's times when it works and there's times when it isn't, but I think if you communicate it well enough, and even if you demonstrate it a couple of times, like walk it through, I think you should be onto a winner if you try and change something.
Yeah, because obviously when you said you're head coach of the 18s, and it's like you have to, do you have to sometimes mirror what's happening in the first team, or is it very much sometimes good to have your own way of thinking, you know, but developing the players into that kind of first team? How does it kind of work at your club?
So originally we have the under 20s at Genefield, and we have the first team above them. I was originally at the under 20s and I got put to be in charge of under 18s, so I tried to mirror what the 20s were doing, and that was like even copying the same shape in a game and trying to have the training the same. But I'm just trying to word this very carefully. It was quite evident that the players at the 18s couldn't do it, and I don't know if it's because when I'd been there, they just hadn't had the education to get them there. And that's no disrespect to who was there before. I think it was just, so I just started doing it how I felt their development needed to go, and I've just taken it from there. But I did try to mirror it. And I just felt, I think if I was to do it now, it would probably work, because they're up to a level where they could do it. But no, I really just do it my way at the 18s.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I've also worked at different clubs, and it's good to have a structure at the top, but sometimes the structure on the way down doesn't mirror sometimes. So we're actually sometimes, you know, hampering the players because we're trying to do something, force something that's actually not going to happen. But that again, it could be they may have only certain players who could play in this setup. You know, let's say you play a 3-5-2 and you get two really good wing backs, but then you go into a 4-4-2, you know, and you've only got two really good centre halves. It's just like, but it could be the 14s group might be better in 2 years' time, but you might, it's all about, I think it's what you say, sometimes it's, you have to look, assess and see what's going to be best for the players, and putting them in a stressful situation where they know they're going to might get beaten, then they're just going to, heads are going down, and then the training drops a little bit because of the intensity. this is another. Do you think that when we look at kind of when we coach the players, sometimes it's good to see the leaders in the team, you know, but also having support from like the top, which is obviously the 80s or the 20s, you know, coming down to maybe do a session to kind of show them, but also maybe under 12s coach stepping up to like the 18s to see how they work, you know, because therefore everyone looks at a pathway. But if you have the same principles just broken down, you know, simplified, you know, per age group, is that something that you maybe personally is quite good, so therefore you could even take the under 10s to see how they react to your training? Because I think that's when you look at the pathway for a lot of teams, they like to chop and move their coaches about, so therefore they can see how the under 8s work, you know, because they may be working in the under 20s one night, the under 8s, number 8s, and they might feel really uncomfortable, but the kids will really enjoy it because that may be a key figure, or like a role model that they look up to when they kind of go to the games.
So especially the under 20s and under 18s, sometimes we've actually mixed the training up, so the under 20s manager can look at potential under 18s to go up and play. I've also taken sessions for like the under 15s and the under 14s, and just to put your name out, say, oh, you know, I'm Greg, I'm the under 18s manager, you know, this is how I do it. I suppose you could call it a wee bit of coach education, and it's good to, because we do have a pathway at Genefield. We do have a pathway that is starting to work now. But I think it's good to like mix people up and just send them there. I have under 17s in my group. I've had under 15s in my group, and it's just good to get these players a higher level of training and just, you know, get them developing and what they need to do. I agree. It's if you've got a pathway and you want it to work, you've got to be moving folk about just to give them a different perspective on like what each team needs, what players need, and it's good to see, like, you know, the under 20 manager goes down to the under 15s. It's good for them to see, oh, you know, this guy's actually watching us train, because in a few years we'll be up there. So it's really good that way. But yeah, I agree with that. I think it's good to mix it up.
Yeah, because actually it's quite beneficial for the kids, but it's also for the coaches too, because there could be a new head coach coming in, you know, or an assistant coach who's like, do you know what, I'm looking at this under 14s coach, and he seems like he's doing the things we want to do, so maybe invite him up. But again, it's like working as a kind of a team, you know, and sometimes it's good to have that. But I was looking at the kind of different sports, you know, like we look at multi-sports now as a big thing, you know, or like we look at from a coaching point of view, like a lot of football coaches love rugby, American football, because of the analytics and the set pieces, you know, obviously leadership in rugby, and you've got like basketball, the fast breaks and different ideas. From your experience, because you said you did like health and sport as part of, you know, your education, do you think that when you've competed or looked at different sports, it's actually helped you become a bit more rounded as a coach, so therefore you can go to maybe a basketball game and analyse it and then think, oh, I could probably use that formation, or, you know, or a rugby where I'm moving the ball but different ways. It's starting to be really more common that not football coaches, but I don't know if you've seen the documentary, the Pep one on BBC, and his mentor's a handball, you know, coach, you know, and he's like, but that's because they learned how to go fast break, how to use different ideas. I'm just thinking, do you think it's a good idea now for coaches to look at different sports and cultures to develop themselves, but also maybe that's not what they want to do, and it's like they see the flaws in that or their team, and they might speak to other coaches in the kind of sports industry?
Absolutely, and I actually want to watch that Pet documentary because it looks really good. I've not watched it yet. When I was at college, we used to play a lot of basketball and volleyball, and there's a few drills that I've actually taken from basketball that I've implemented into my coaching in football, because it's the same principle. I'll just try and quickly explain it. You obviously have two hoops of basketball, and there's an attacking team and a defending team defends both hoops, so I just pretty much replaced that with mini goals in football, and it's all about your strikers like getting into movement, like away to try and score a goal, and it works really well. It's brutal for the defending team, but it actually works really well with movement. And the volleyball, as much as it's very enjoyable, we sometimes, you know, just for a bit of crack, like for a fun game, we play that with the lads just to get them a fun warm-up. So I think it's really good if you can incorporate other sports into your own sport, because it just mixes it up. And you know, there's fundamentals, like, I'm trying to think, you know, basketball's like a very fast-paced game, so you could argue it would really help developing attacking and defending transitions. So I have incorporated other sports into my coaching, because one, it's quite fun to see players say, oh, we're going to do like a volleyball drill today, and you can see them looking at you, or like, we're going to play a game of head tennis, or for example, foot tennis, sorry. But yeah, no, I do. I think it's really important to do that.
And looking at look at different kind of sports and cultures, but also like coach education, you know, we look at like scouting, recruitment, you know, analysis. You said obviously you did your an internship. Do you think is we look at the as a kind of coach? I think we discussed it earlier, but see the internship you had at Ross County. Did that make you think, oh, I want to be an analyst, or I want to, because obviously you're going to be intern as an analyst, but you're also going to learn how the head coach works. Is it good to, you said, if you make a mistake, it's a major problem, but you'll obviously learn that everyone's human. Is it good to get out of your comfort zone, but also you know you're a decent coach, but you're like, I've spoke to a lot of good coaches, and then you're thinking, I'm so out of my depth out of this because there's so many more people. And it's usually the quieter coaches are actually the more exciting ones, because you get to pick their brains, because nobody wants to talk to a lot of the choir coaches because they're just kind of like do their own little thing. But but sometimes they're the ones, and also the ones that shout are very good too. But is it good to maybe reach out on LinkedIn, reach out on Twitter, and just pick people's brains, because the football world is very, sometimes very closed, and sometimes it's very open. And but again, LinkedIn, I think, is really good. When you put something out, you get a very good reaction sometimes of like, I'm looking for this information, and you get quite a lot of people you've never seen before or heard from pipe in.
Yeah, I must admit, I think LinkedIn is an absolute goldmine for trying to get information off coaches, like, you know, directors of football, performance analysts, you know, even people that are in the education sector, like in sports lectures. It is an absolute goldmine getting information off folk. The same with, I was going to say Twitter, but it's called X now, yeah, as well. It's, you know, it's the same. Like, the amount of people that, including myself, that are trying to increase their social media presence by like putting session plans out, putting stuff like that out, you know, doing podcasts like yourself, it's really helpful for other people, you know, trying to get information. And going back to talking about the internship I had at Ross County, it was difficult. My first one was an away game, I think it was at St Johnston at McDermott Park, and I got there and I was obviously like a deer caught in the headlights a wee bit, because, like, you know, the moment's kind of taking you in a wee bit. It's like, oh, I'm here with a Premiership team, and the guy was really good, very good at his job, but I'll never take that away from him. But I was like holding the camera, trying to film it, and I just got a bit nervous, and the camera started shaking a wee bit, and he just went mental, and I'm thinking, oh my god, it was only 5 minutes in, what have I got myself into? But he gave me some really good advice after. He's like, look, it's a high pressure situation, we can't afford to make a mistake because you're filming the game, you know, for us to analyse. But it's like driving a car, like, you know, you learn how to get better at it, so keep doing it and you'll get better. And it was actually after that and a few other games, once I got the ropes, it was really enjoyable. And I do try and take it into my coaching, like, you try and like look between the lines of, like, when you see people like doing a skill or a movement in a game, and you try and get your analyst brain on and just pick it apart. But yeah, you know, it was a fantastic experience, and I would definitely want to do it again.
Yeah, because that's the thing, you look at, like, I know it's sometimes scary, but you're actually asking for help, and a lot of people really struggle with that. It's like, I was reading a really good book called Surrounded by Idiots, you know, and it's like the four colours of red, blue, green and yellow, and it's like, what are people, you know? I think I'm, well, my wife probably say, but I'm probably red because I'm quite, you know, I like to just keep control of things, you know, and do that like a lot and talk a lot, as we probably know here. But do you think it's, but the biggest thing I'm learning is asking for help, but it's just getting a mentor, you know, and see, the when you obviously did the internship, you've got someone beside you who's helping you, but obviously their job isn't aligned, because if you make a mistake, then they're here for it, not you. Is it good having mentors in the football world, but also outside the football world? Like, I've got five or six people, and I've got one who is incredible, who's a really good football in the football world, and I've got one who's completely not in the football world, but is in performance and mindset. But we talk every month, you know, just kind of keeping chatting. Is it good to have that kind of a variety of different mentors? So therefore, you can pick the brains in about people about performance or mental health or physical fitness. Is that something that you learned when you were kind of throughout the kind of years, you know, going to college and kind of doing the masters at the moment?
Yeah, I've been very lucky to have, football coaching wise, two very, very good mentors at Genefield. They were both A licensed at the time, and one's just got a job with a League Two team being an opposition analyst, and the other one's, I think, just got a job at Dunfermline being the head of coaching for the academy. So I was really fortunate to learn off them at their time at Genefield. I don't have a mentor outside of football, but that's maybe something I should look at, because that's a good point you've made there. But the guy who was at Ross County, he had won the FA Cup with Portsmouth as their analyst, so he was obviously very, very good at what he did. And as, like I said, it was very hard at the start, but the information he gave me was unbelievable. So he was a very good mentor as well. The lecturers at Perth were very good. When I did my first undergrad degree, they were very good, and the lectures I've got at Stirling are just are top class. Like, they seriously know their stuff. So I think I've been quite fortunate the way I've done things. I've always had really good people in my life to just give me advice when I need it. So I think I've been quite fortunate there.
Yeah, and I know it's a Friday night, so do I take too long? But just kind of talking, kind of wrapping up, and kind of mindset. You know, that's the kind of thing. How would you describe your mindset? And also, when you're working in kind of high pressure situations, you need to have that kind of clear way of thinking. You know, we just, you know, chatted beforehand, you know, about sometimes it's practice, you know, because there's no such thing as perfection. But if you practice, you're never going to get anything 100% right all the time. But is it good having that mindset of, do you know what, I've made a mistake, or do you know what, I'm going to try and deal with something that I'm totally out of my comfort zone, but it's going to make me a better coach in the long term. But sometimes I'm anxious about asking about, for, you know, kind of development.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've really started to accept as I've started coaching is that you will make mistakes. You will always make mistakes. Like, I make mistakes in sessions, I make mistakes in team talks, you know, even setting simple drills on it, I make mistakes. But it's how you react from it, because it's very easy just to put your head down and go, I'm away home. Well, not that extreme, but, you know, it'd be very easy just to get your head down and actually down and don't stress the night. But being able to take it in your stride is, you know, just like, okay, I made a mistake, let's, you know, just correct it, just get on with it, and just keep going. I think it's a lot of, when I was younger, like, if I made a mistake, my head would go down, but now it doesn't, because it's like, if my head goes down, if I'm taking session, I'm the head coach, and my head goes down, chances are players' heads will go down because there's a mistake been made, and the stuff like that. And coaching has really taught me that it really is always a learning environment. Like, you're always going to learn no matter what. So if you make a mistake, you learn from it. You do something well, you learn from it. So as long as you can learn from it, then it's not really a mistake, it's a learning experience. So that's the way I've always tried to look at it since I've got gotten more experienced at coaching and just progressed up through my badges and qualifications. Just learn from it. Just learn from everything as much as you possibly can. Learn from everything and everyone as much as you can.
Yeah, because I think there's I've seen a thing a couple of years ago. It was Antonio Conte. He was the front row of Marcel Bielsa, and he was like the student in the game, you know. And you can always learn from the 19-year-old or the 17-year-old who might just be the raw, you know, coach, but they might give you some ideas because they might have contacts that are higher than yours. But again, it's all about that. You can always learn from what I always say. If you're in a 6-hour lecture or a 6-hour, you can always learn one small thing, and it might be. If you go to an event and it's completely not the thing you're looking at, but you're liking, all right, actually, I might network with someone who's actually maybe might help me. And I think it's sometimes good to go to events, you know, like conferences and all that are, you know, big, but also ones that are small. So therefore, it's more kind of intimate, so you can learn from different people, but you can also ask more questions. But thanks again, Greg, for taking half an hour tonight on a Friday night. But I hope... the future as well for you, and good luck.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It was a real pleasure to be on. Really appreciate it.